Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness. And it seems like the popular movement, people are waking up to their soul quality, their soul essence, beyond the personality and who we really are. And that's what I'm talking to tonight's guests about. James Dignam, originally from Ireland, now living in New York. He has a new book out. James, welcome to the program. And your new book is Solar Return, you said?
Yes, it's called Solar Return, Alan. Thank you very much for inviting me on your show. I appreciate it.
Well, I just like hearing your actually.
Thank you very much.
No, but I love that Irish accent because oh, it's a worldwide phenomenon, what's happening, this awakening of consciousness. And why don't you give us a little background? Because you brought up probably pretty typically in Ireland, you know, where in your country, I mean, we're all brought up. But what was the moment where you said, I think there's something more going on here?
Well, I didn't really know it at the time when I was in Ireland, which was over 30 years ago. I think it was a process because I was probably, you know, I didn't even know who I was at that stage. I had no voice to speak for myself. In my book, I talk about, in the early part of my book, I talk about the major seminal events of my life that kind of steered me into holistic health and wellness. And one of them was depression. And with my depression, I was unable to speak. I had no voice. So, you know, I was even to speak on the phone with somebody, I wouldn't even have any courage or anything. And after many years, 15 years of going through that, I finally kind of got some voice. But then another major event as well, I also write about in the book, is called the piece called From Heartbreak to Breakthrough. And I was in this relationship and it fell apart, but it was such a heart-shattering event that it somehow opened something in me that was buried. And it's really from that heart-shattering event was back around 2003 that I finally was able to find my call in my direction in life. It's like when you shatter something and then you find something within it. And then if you were able to find something deeper, because really events in life have deeper meaning unless we go into victimization and then we don't find any meaning. We just kind of get sucked into a quicksand. But I was able to find deeper meaning.
Isn't that why people are depressed? No, I'm just curious. Isn't that why people are depressed? Because they get sucked into a victimization consciousness. So how did you actually get out of that? Because it's most people never get out of it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, when I was doing my book, I did some statistics, and there's a study from Emory University, and it had suicide statistics. They said in the United States, every 38 seconds, somebody attempts suicide. So in the space of one day, 94 people succeed in taking their lives. In the space of years, 35,000. So that means every 38 seconds, somebody wants to kill themselves, which is a very unfortunate thing. And the United States is not that bad in compared with other countries. There are much higher levels. So it's a very there's different things there. There's different processes going on here. We could even go up to the soul level, and are there issues up there even, or could we have ancestral issues as well? That one thing I did was family constellations, and could there be some issue going way back there? Or today we're learning a lot more about depression. Now it's a complex illness. Like Daniel Amen, who is a very prominent psychiatrist, he says giving someone the diagnosis of depression is like giving the diagnosis of chest pains. You know, there's many underlying causes. It's a very complex illness, but, you know, people who, I think today there's much higher levels of depression in millennials because they don't know themselves. Really, I think if you want to find it, it's like you have to find yourself, your soul, your true self, and that's only where you're going to find joy.
What was it for you? But do you mind talking about what were you so depressed about, or maybe you didn't even know?
I didn't even know. It's like one day I described my book. I come home from a karate class, and all of a sudden, it's like a Mack truck hit me, and it just came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, these feelings, but depressive feelings are much more than feeling down. They are horrifying feeling, because you want to get away from them, and you would even attempt to kill yourself because they're such, you know, it's hard. Unless somebody really gets into that place, they really don't understand it. But maybe my issue, my father died very young, and I think that might be an issue. You know, when you lose a parent, you know, even though infants don't know that, they kind of do know that, because they're still, the frequency of the parent is no longer there, kind of matching back them, and then they go into panic and they feel abandoned, maybe.
What happened, you said? You what?
So maybe I sensed that my father abandoned me or something, and I also then had huge rage towards my mother. So I'm not sure. It was kind of complex there, and my mother was pretty strict and everything, but, you know, you don't get severely depressed because of that there. But maybe I just hadn't a voice for myself, and I was also in school. A teacher would beat me up, and I couldn't speak up for myself. So it's kind of, I could never really trigger down what it was. So it's, but I kind of think maybe a combination of losing my father very early, having no fatherly figure in my life, and then, you know, just kind of, you know, growing up in a very kind of small. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but how did you pull yourself? I mean, it's pretty miraculous. Most people would commit suicide or whatever, right?
Absolutely, yeah, but it took me many years. I was in therapy for many years, probably, and a culmination of that there. But also, I think just laughing. I think, you know, I kind of was able to laugh. You know, I think Norman Cousins kind of used laughter to heal himself. So I think when you can laugh, you know, and not get too serious somehow, and through the help of many people, that it could be a contributing factor, you know, that I was able to maybe just through laughter and very caring people and practitioners. I was on the conventional approach to medication and psychotherapy, so that helped me as well to verbalize all these repressed feelings that were there for decades that were unable to be expressed as well. So like a pressure relief valve. But also I think laughing is very important, because it changes the endorphins and you feel better. And who knows, maybe I just got some miraculous healing that I'm even unaware of, you know?
Well, I think on a higher level, it seems like maybe on the personality level you were suffering, but on a higher level you saw a bigger picture. Could that
be? Yeah, maybe it could be, and maybe subconsciously it wasn't in my conscious mind, because at that stage I had no interest in health and wellness. I didn't even know what it was, and that wouldn't come until that break up the relationship. That really was the shattering moment. So maybe I had to somehow get myself back to a more emotional stability, and then I was able to kind of get to the next level. But I think also maybe it's just through our development and understanding, and, you know, maybe just different events in life, and we evolve, and maybe the body moves out of that, the chemical imbalance. So it could be, I can't really pinpoint it exactly, but, you know, it just began to fade away. It's like you know, you've been in the dark for 10 or 15 years, and someday the light comes in again, and you kind of know that.
But what do you think on a soul level? You know, our soul brings all these experiences to us. And on a soul level, what was the experience you needed to learn from this?
Well, I think maybe if we go to family constellations, which you and I have kind of studied a bit, we can see that our ancestors have big influences. And we see in family constellations, when a parent dies at young, there's an inclination for particularly a child, they kind of want to follow that parent, because if they get entangled with them, they kind of feel that they want to carry the faith of that parent with them. And so they might be inclined to maybe have a death wish subconsciously.
Right.
So maybe on a soul level, that's the entanglement there. But also then maybe where the soul itself was, who knows what happened in the past life there. Was there some issues that could I have done something to somebody that maybe caused them to suffer greatly or something? And now I pay this karmic debt off in this world, I would go under it myself.
But also on a soul level, there's always a lesson, you know, why it happens. Like, what did you learn and grew from that sort of situation? Like, what was the soul lesson? Like, what did you learn that helped helped you break through instead of break down, you know?
Right. I think I probably can be very compassionate. I can see people suffering. Maybe today you can become a better healer, I think, because once you go through an experience like that, and I said, and as long as you don't become a victim, where then, you know, it's just self-defeating there. But if you can draw from that, and then you can become a much better healer, because, you know, you can help people. Maybe I can help people maybe more who go into depression, because I myself have been there myself, and I have my share my own experience. So I can empathize and almost kind of see where the person is and be more effective as a practitioner helping somebody in that situation. I think when you have those kind of scars in yourself, you know, you can be more effective in that way.
Oh, so you gained a level of insight and into people. Now you coach people in these sort of transformational practices, right?
Yeah. Then I'm able to kind of put myself kind of where the person is, because I can kind of see, I can understand where you are, because I myself was in there, but I wouldn't tell that person. But I can kind of understand the fear and everything, and the uncertainty and the hopelessness, and some people never get out of depression.
What do you do for someone? Yeah.
Probably there's a couple of techniques. One is called the emotion code. It's a technique created by a chiropractor in Utah, where you can clear trapped emotions energetically from the body, where you can use muscle testing, and where you can actually muscle test the body for specific emotions. And this guy named Dr. Bradley Nelson found a very effective way, very simple. When you can muscle test, and you can really narrow down the specific emotion, and then you can clear it through a magnet, running it in reverse over the governing meridian, which runs from the top of your nose all the way over your head and down. And by taking out these emotional energies, you kind of become lighter. You're getting rid of your emotional baggage. And also the diet is very important. You know, the brain has a big impact on our emotions and feelings. And we know now through the digestive system, if you don't have the right bacteria in your system, now it can affect your brain. It can affect your behaviors and everything. So this is something looked at. Now they're looking at things called psychobiotics, which are different than probiotics that you would take. These are focused more on the helping you mentally in your digestive system, and how you can change behavior. So our digestive system has a huge impact now on our well-being. So by changing the diet and getting people to meditate and dealing with stress, because I think, you know, when we're overstressed today, that's really compounding the problem. People get overwhelmed, and that's why a lot of people get depressed, because the stress is overwhelming and their life is so much out of balance. So support them with the body and the mind and the soul, because these are the three aspects that the human being works by. And if I can support them in these different aspects of who they are, then it can be much more effective and more healthier for them to get back into balance.
So what do you mean by the title of your book, Solar Return? What does that mean?
Well, actually, it was one, because I was always thinking about meditation. I had this analogy of how the name comes, because it comes from astrology, which uses the term called solar return, which is a sun return. Like in astrology, when you were born, all the planets were at very specific points in the sky, and the sun was one of those planets. And then the astrologer would chart, you know, where these planets are. And then when you come back to your birthday the following year, those planets kind of come back to the same point. So a solar return normally is when the sun comes back to that same exact point on your birthday, and then it kind of, they give you a solar return chart that can kind of maybe say what's happening in the coming year. So then I was kind of thinking about,
what does it mean for your book?
Yeah, for me, it's kind of a solar return. In this case, is a soul returning, meaning a soul reincarnating, because I really felt that reincarnation is a really the major piece of our life and why we're here. You know, people say, why is it kind of ties in with the creator and God as well. Does God really care about people? And, you know, some people have it so bad, some people have it so good. And but if you kind of look at it from the soul reincarnation, maybe our soul, which comes kind of, I think it comes into this dimension for us to evolve. And I think we come in already with what we're going to work on. And a solar return is a soul coming back to reincarnate to help its development and evolution. I wasn't really too much into reincarnation before originally, but when studying the work of Michael Newton, he wrote a book called Journey of Souls, and he was able to get into what happens to a soul between incarnations, which very few people did. And he was able to access, and he found out through 7,000 case studies consistently what souls do. And usually souls kind of, there's a whole lot going up there in the spiritual realm. And then he kind of tells you about you come back into this dimension already preparing to work on issues that you pre-plan ahead of time. What's that?
So you pre-plan. No, so what do, well, first of all, what do souls do in between incarnations? What's happening?
Well, from Dr. Newton's work, I think, and he's the pioneer in this, I think it's a whole, it's like they actually go and revise their lifetimes. They go into big study halls because you can really create anything up there. But they really look at their life because they're consistently working on their evolution. And each time you go back to the spiritual world, the few things he found consistently was everybody has a soul guide, number one. Everybody is involved with a very specific soul group who stays with people for many, many lifetimes. They're like people in a play, basically, the same group of actors. And in our life right now, we probably have some of these actors who are going to be playing roles as mother, father, brother, sister, husband, wife. And these people come in and they kind of challenge us. But we do know they're challenging us, but they're challenging us. And then our job is because they come with us and they kind of know what we're going to work on. And if we can kind of can work on, you know, forgiveness, loving ourselves, overcoming different emotions and everything, maybe even if we come in, we might take on a disability even because it's not so much that we want to be disabled, but it can really help our soul evolve. We also might have a karmic debt that we want to pay off because of another lifetime. But also what he found was when you go back after a lifetime, you go in front of these, he calls them elders. They're not so much judges, but they ask you about your life. They kind of say, you know, you had this last life, you pre-planned what you're going to work on. So now what is your taking and how well did you do in this lifetime? Did you meet up to these specific tasks and challenges and that you're going to work on? And you kind of look at yourself because really, I don't think there's anybody judging us up there as such as religions would see it. I think we'll be looking at our soul really truly, and we'll know how well or unwell we did in this lifetime. And I think if we can understand from the bigger perspective that up in these lifetimes, we go up there, we have our teachers up there, and they help us, and we review past lives, and we kind of see where we mistakes and how we can correct these mistakes. And with each incarnation, we're consistently working on our development. So if we can see life from that broader picture, and we then don't personalize events in life, if we can see, okay, you know, I'm here and I'm working on stuff, and if I'm willing to do that, if I can be not judgmental of people or judging of situations, and if I can just keep working on myself, then, you know, this is the real big picture, because this is not the real reality. This is the unreality. The real reality is a spiritual reality. But as Einstein said, reality is an optical illusion of consciousness, though a persistent one. But because of our senses, we can't see the big picture.
But if we take your life, if you want to, you would say you decided to be depressed, I mean, in those in between lives, so you could overcome it. Would that be something you would do in between lives?
Yes, I think so. Because, see, if I could come to the realization that, as I've understood in the last couple of years, that maybe I decided to come in and see how I could develop myself. I said, if I come in here and I face great depression to the point that I might kill myself, but I don't. But if I can see a deeper meaning, and then if I have a relationship with somebody which was heart-shattering, and I don't go into victimization, and then if I find meaning out of that, which I did, because then I only figured out about health and wellness from that heart-shattering event. Now then, if I can apply these to my life, and more importantly, if I can share them with people and help people to they themselves find a deeper meaning to life, then my lessons could be learned. Then the purpose of my life here will make much sense. Then when I'm working for my soul, because that's really the real me, if I can be living for my soul, then, you know, I don't have any problem, because that's really what we're trying to do when you're talking today about evolution of consciousness. We are moving there gradually, but people still don't have a big understanding. But hopefully through my book and through you and other people, the more people are aware of that.
So let's say someone planned the same thing. They get depressed, they have heartbreak, but they didn't come to where you are. They could do that in a life review, but because you did it incarnationally, you took a huge leap forward in your soul's evolution, right?
Yes. How I'm seeing. Yeah, definitely. Because he also mentioned too that in the spirit, in the spiritual world, you can also see how developed the soul is, and you know by the color of the soul. Like, you know, there's different grades of souls. There's a young soul, an intermediate soul, or an old soul. So you can
tell. Are you a black belt?
Well, I'm getting there, Alan. You know, I think maybe this wake up call, you know, and, you know, my kind of waking up, my, you know, wake up from the, what does the Buddha call it? You know, we got to wake up, you know, and kind of wake up from the slumber of illusion. And I think so. I think we're getting there, and there's no comparison. There's no judging in the spiritual world. There's so much love and understanding and forgiveness up there. You know, it's not like down here with the real world where we're judging and criticizing, and we've got people lording over us up there. It's very understanding, very compassionate people, and really helping us.
Do you think people? But what if someone chooses depression, and they don't? I mean, they still chose it in that in between incarnational. But they don't get over it. I mean, suicide.
I remember one time Michael Newton did discuss that, and there was somebody who had kind of a pattern of committing suicide over different lives, and the elders got kind of upset. They, like, if somebody's got maybe a terminal illness and they feel hopeless, but if you've got a healthy body and you just feel, life sucks and I want to kill myself, they don't take too kindly to that, because they say, we give you this healthy body and you just throw it away. Because I feel that if you don't work on these stuff, you got to come back and do them. That's why it's so important. It's like you get, say, stuck in the same place.
But isn't it still their soul's decision? I mean, that's what I don't understand.
Well, I think we have to find that deeper meaning. I think if we, you know, that's the thing. Like, it's like there's something buried in us, like in our chest, our soul. But if we're willing to look at it, if we're willing to, you know, just hold on a second now, and if we can get help and get compassionate people coming into us, and be willing to say, let me try this, you know, not just say, what's the point, you know, but some people can do that. I can understand that as well. You know, it's complex because everybody's so different.
But this is why, if they do, like, are depressed and they commit suicide, obviously their soul wanted to do that though, right? I mean, or not? I mean, where's...
I don't think so. I think, you know, again, each circumstance is so complex, and what's going on there, it's hard to know exactly what it was. Maybe was there some karmic issues or something, or, you know, it's hard to know anybody, because human beings, you know, there's patterns going for thousands of years in this, and we can't really just pick one. It's like a movie, you know, I pick one scene and then you want to get an understanding of the whole story. It's not that easy, you know, it's... People, there's many situations happening, and I would think there'd be patterns as well there going on that could be going back, and unless you go to the spiritual world and really see the soul.
Well, that's a very intelligent answer. Thank you. Thank you for that answer. So your work now, though, because we're all here to help each other, is to point out those soul patterns and to assist people to the next level, right, would you say?
Yes, I think so. I think if we can give people opportunities, if we show them there are different these different modalities. Now, today there's a thing called energy psychology, which is bridging kind of Western psychology with Eastern treatments like acupuncture, like techniques like the emotional freedom technique, thought field therapy. There's many modalities that are bridging them together, which can be much more effective and really get to deeper levels than just giving people multiple medications and being on psychotherapy for many years. And another technique I kind of studied one time is called the havening technique, created by a physician in Manhattan, which can be very effective for trauma, PTSD, or phobia. And it's a very simple technique to use. So I think it's coming in more, it's under the umbrella of energy psychology. So we got these new techniques and we're having more holistic approach to people. I think that can be more effective as well, you know?
Yeah, no, that's good. So now I'm getting the title of your book, Soul Return. You're helping people return to their soul. That's what your book is really about, right?
Yes, yeah, that they can understand the soul and reincarnation and how a soul return is the soul returning for its development and evolution. And if they can kind of see that their life has much deeper meaning than way they look at on the surface, that, you know, they, if they're willing to look, you know, you have to go out and search there. The Buddha didn't become enlightened just, you know, he became a king and sit in his palace all day, but he had to go through major suffering. And Jesus the same, you know, you have to really be wanting it and be really to put in the effort. And it's a process, you know, you have to really want it and be willing, because it's hard work, you know. You have to really, and you may have to look at aspects of yourself that you don't like.
You have to be so hard. But why does it have to be so hard?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's the only way you grow, you know, because if you're, you know, like the Buddha didn't, he had to become emaciated, almost dead, almost dying, basically. And he was challenged by Mara, king of the demons. So I think it's, you have to, it's like you're trying to find a very valuable treasure, like the Holy Grail, but you've got to do a lot of searching and you've got to face, it's like the hero's journey. You will be facing many challenges, many demons or dragons along the journey. And if you're willing to face the demons, because you're really facing your own fears, basically, that's who the big demon is. It's your fear. And it's the ego and it's the illusion. And that's the shadow self, as Carl Jung would put it.
Guess if it was easy, though, we wouldn't really learn anything, right?
Yeah, like if we had a reality where we had everything. Yeah, if we were in a world where we had everything and everything was good and we had these perfect bodies, perfect, then nobody would develop. We wouldn't grow. You only grow and develop by, you know, it's like if you don't want to build up your muscles and everything, you have to go to the gym and work out consistently. If you want to build up your soul muscle, then you're going to have to work on that too, you know. I think, you know, that there's choices. I remember even Alexander, he wrote a book, Proof of Heaven, and he talked about the Creator. And the Creator says, yes, there you have free will, because free will then gives you the option to choose from good or bad. Like, these are the things that come with free will. You're going to have to choose either way, but evil, bad will never override the good. It's like on the beach, you have a few black grains of bad sand, we'll say evil, but the white sand would be forever overwhelming it. But we have this choice. You can choose good or bad, and it's up to each of us to choose, because free will gives us that option. But if we can keep choosing the right stuff and keep moving in the right direction, because that's what we're trying to do right now. We know that the fear, which is the ego, the consciousness, that's really dominant on the world today. But we're shifting that. We're moving more towards light. And as people wake up, more light kind of overwhelms the darkness.
So if we have free will, because it's like a battle between the personality and the soul. When the personality is stronger, it gets us into trouble because we haven't listened to our soul. So that's the sort of muscle we exercise. Because if we're just doing everything according to the higher purpose, I guess it would be easier, but we wouldn't have the free will that we need to train our soul to be in alignment with the totality. I mean, it's making sense as you're talking. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, and also we're in a world where like the ego is very dominant, because it wants about beauty and fame and money and power, and that's very enticing. You know, it's hard for somebody to say, you know, I don't really want that, because that's the ego. But we're so gravitating, you know, if we watch television and that's all we see. We don't see somebody who says you don't need that. There's a much better way, you know. But you have to work on it. You have to really you know, you can still have a good life and everything, but you're going to be so much more connected because you're finding true value. You're finding true peace, true purpose, because now you're aligned with your soul, which is aligned with the Creator. And you're kind of connecting with your true source, your true self. And then you realize, like, I don't really need all these external things because they're superficial and they're temporary. It's like the drug addict who says, I'm feeling so bad and I get my fix. And then I have my fix and I'm feeling so great. But then my fix wears off and then I get depressed again. And I want another fix. That's the ego, like, gives these little pieces, but you will never be satiated. Whereas if you're with your soul, you realize, I don't need it because I am already it.
How come this is not more popular? It seems like this should be the currency. How come it's, I mean, what's the big deal about materiality and fame? Why don't people just do this?
Well, again, you know, Alan, you know, if you start talking about it today, the Western mindset, which is very linear, very Newtonian, it hasn't gone into that quantum leap of the Einsteinian side of the brain yet. You know, it's very, and religion had such a power, and patriarchal structures had such control and domination over mindset and belief systems. And, you know, it was not too long ago where people who had beliefs like we are today would probably be burned at the stake, you know. So that's still inculcated into the collective consciousness. So I kind of see the collective consciousness like an ocean, and all the fear that goes in there is like it contaminates the ocean. But when you start working yourself, you kind of clean up the emotion, up the ocean. But that comes by your own thought process, because your own thought process is really going into a very large thought process, the collective consciousness. But people don't want to do it. They think, oh, it's too much trouble and it's woo-woo stuff. And, you know, if you start talking about it on mainstream stuff, they'll think you're nuts or you're a quack or whatever, you know. So you got to kind of overcome all these barriers and these belief systems that have been so dominant. But I think now, since we kind of passed 2012, they kind of say we're into the age of Aquarius, the water carrier, and we left the age of Pisces, which was for 2,000 years, a very patriarchal structure of belief systems and religion. So we're now going into a more community-based era, and we're coming to a more cooperative time. And now I think with the internet and social media, now we can reach more people very quickly, and messages can get to people faster. So I do believe there is a shift there, but it's a glacial shift as well. And by each of us doing that, you know, I don't think we would need a major quantity of people to shift. We might need 30% maybe of the population who could shift this to the other side, you know. So it is happening, and it's gradually happening, I think. So, you know, you say, why isn't it happening? But it's a slow process, you know. Human evolution didn't happen overnight. It took millions of years, but hopefully it's going to happen much faster, because I think the more we, each of us, do our part, it kind of builds momentum.
Do you think it does seem like, so you think we are moving out of this age of materiality into this new age? I think that's why I'm doing programs like this, and we're trying to help it along. That's why you wrote your book, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I remember Michael Newton in his book there, because one of his last books was written back in the late 1900s, and he kind of said that those elders up there are getting kind of impatient with us humans down here, because we're using a lot of drugs to alter our consciousness, and it's really impeding. Dr. Michael Newton, he wrote the book Journey of Souls, but he had another book called Destiny of Souls that followed up, and he was kind of getting the feeling that they're not happy with our progress because we're using all these mind-altering drugs, and they're kind of preventing us from accessing our soul and our development. So they're kind of pulling back. As you notice, more as more people with higher degrees and everything, like even Alexander, a world kind of renowned neurosurgeon, there's a doctor out in California, and they're getting these people to have these experiences to kind of, you know, show a more kind of a scientific proof on that there, you know. And there's guys at Virginia University studying reincarnation as well. So I think it's coming more mainstream, you know.
So, yeah, that's why I'm doing this program, because there's obviously is a shift, there's an awakening happening, and we're part of it. It's exciting to be part of a new movement, isn't it?
It's great, you know, because it's we're at a. I think Greg Braden, in one of his books, he said that the Mayas kind of said once we pass 2012, we're going into uncertainty. They don't really know. It's like we completed this 25 or 26,000 year cycle, and then we're kind of going into this time. But they said we have this option where we can be very constructive or very destructive. So I'm hoping we're moving the more constructive way. But we. I think now with the internet coming on, that's going to be very helpful because that, you know, today you can reach millions of people than you could maybe 20 or 30 years ago that would never have heard of this stuff. Now you're reaching all corners of the globe.
But it's also another form of mind control. The internet can also be a form of mind control as well. I mean, it has a good and a bad side.
Right. But I think, you know, if your intentions are good, you will connect with those people there. And I think, you know, you're doing for the right thing and you don't want to kind of manipulate or deceive people or anything. You really want them to give them the truth and give them the ways that they're searching for, that they want a different way, a different understanding, see a deeper meaning to their life, why they're here in the first place. And something in them might be triggered, then some seed might be triggered, and who knows what awakening they have. So I think, you know, we're all kind of adding to it in our own little way. We're all helping even... You know, if we just walk down the street and you help somebody, you know, that by itself can be very helpful as well, you know. So it's subtle things, you know, they say the small things have the greatest power, whereas the nuke, whereas the atom or whereas the mustard seed. It's these little things, but they have such great power in them.
So your work is more like a coach, helping people maybe who are just waking up to like... something's happening and they can't figure it out. Is that what you say your work is on that level?
Yes, it's kind of, I would kind of look at them. Originally, when I started off with a health coach, I was very focused on nutrition because that's kind of what was in my learning stage about 10 years ago. But then I got more interested in the mind over time and then eventually towards the soul. So I've been kind of working these different aspects and then looking at somebody, because when somebody comes to me, usually I don't kind of, somebody comes to me with a back issue one time and I don't tell them, well, I'm not a doctor, so I don't treat or diagnose you. But what I can do is set a very specific goal with you. And then I can see if there are any emotions connected to your goal. Because usually when somebody has a pain issue or anything like that, there'll always be trapped emotions in the body. And using this technique I told you called the emotion code is one technique that I can use to clear an emotion. And for that person, by clearing that emotion and setting a very specific goal, I was able to help them with their back issue. But somebody else then might come for a nutrition and I would also guide them. But I'm always kind of looking at the whole person. You know, you just can say, oh, go eat your kale and you're going to be healthy. I would say, what's happening the rest of your life? How's your relationship? How's your spirituality? How's your activity? How's your stress? You know, how you're taking control of your stress. So really looking at the whole person, a very holistic approach, which I believe can be the most effective approach. And I think we're moving towards that way now today with even medicine, like functional medicine. They're looking at the whole person as opposed to the old model of just giving them drugs, you know, and just looking specifically.
Do you recommend meditation and things like that as well?
Yes, for the mind is probably one of the best ways. Meditation and prayer, I think, you know, I think they really go hand in hand together. I usually start my day off with meditation and prayer because I think when you start from that way in the day, in the morning, your day would go so much better because you come from a very centered state of being, your presence. It's like you kind of tune, you become like a tuning fork, and that frequency then goes with you through in the day, and the resonance kind of goes out there, and it seems to harmonize the day better than somebody who just wakes up and jumps out of bed and they don't even know where they're coming or going. You know, they're a bit more disorganized, where if you come from that very stable place. But I think with meditation, you really have to work on it. It's a practice that you have to build upon. It's like a muscle. You have to keep exercising it, and the more you do that, then you know you create great stability in your brain, in your mind, in your presence, and in your whole life.
So what kind of prayer is prayer the most powerful thing you say you do every morning, or what would you say is?
I'd say I'd probably combine them together. I think they work in tandem much better. I think because, you know, some people can't meditate. You know, they have a very kind of, their mind wanders off a lot. That's for the person who starts off first. And I think for somebody like that, maybe going to a meditation group where you have somebody to follow, which is easier than trying to do it yourself. But I think a combination of prayer and whatever your prayers can be, you know, you have to find what suits you, that resonates with you. And then bring in the prayers in combination with the meditation, they kind of complement each other much more effectively. I think a medium once told me, he says, prayer is talking to God, and meditation is talking with God. So I think you're conversating, and you're conversating with the Creator, because I believe that the Creator is stillness, silence.
Oh, so prayer is you talking to God, and meditation is God talking to you. Would you say that?
Yes, I would say it's kind of a dialogue, but it's there's no words there, but there's just presence. I think that's who the Creator really is. In my book, I have a chapter called On a Mission from God.
What's that about?
It's kind of about are we on a mission? Like from the Blues Brothers, Jake and Edward said they were on a mission from God. And I think we are. I think we come out of the spiritual realm into here to develop our soul. But we're basically, because we are a fragment of the Creator anyway. So we have that creative abilities in us already. It's imprinted in us. And I think, you know, when we meditate, then we realign, reconnect back with that source of who we really are. Because I think that's my take of the Creator and the whole reality of what's going on. The Creator is a creative force, and the Creator is kind of learning to know itself, and it's going to create trillions of forms, and these forms just keep evolving and evolving, because the Creator is kind of saying, where's this all going to? So let me just keep trying this new stuff, and if something doesn't last, then I'll adapt into some other new form of evolution. So I feel, but we're one of them, but we're up the consciousness scale, because we know from science that everything in the universe is made of energy. But then a rock is energy, but it doesn't have very much consciousness. So you've got energy, but you've got to have consciousness, and there's different levels of consciousness. And we're pretty well up there in the consciousness scale, but we're not all the way up there. Like, there's higher beings who will be above us. But as we meditate and pray, we evolve our consciousness. That's why meditation is very effective that way. And we get closer to the Creator, because our consciousness is rising up towards it.
Would you say that when you say Creator, would you say that's the God part of us? Is the Creator?
Yeah, I think
Or is it something else?
I would say that the Creator is kind of like, if we look at the cosmos as this one big, you know, closing system, then anything and the Creator, there's some tremendous energy. You know, we're just using words here, but, you know, these are just words that we have to communicate. You know, this Creator can be anything at once. It could be a rock. It could be a cosmos. It could be a galaxy. So it can take trillions of different forms, you know, but we're one of those forms. But we're up there. We're an extension of it, you know, and we're evolving, you know, through the Creator. Is kind of, we're infused with that energy, with that intelligence. And I think when we find ourselves, we're realizing that intelligence within us, and we can use it to our advantage. We can create miracles. We can create the life we want. We come enlightened. We live a life of peace and joy, because that's really what the Creator is, to have peace and joy in our life. But we can also choose misery, and we can choose victimization. That's also a choice as well, you know. That's where your kind of free will comes in.
Most people don't think it's a choice when they're feeling victimized. Right.
Yeah. Well, again, it'll of course depend on their situations. We have no idea. To kind of just generalize it is kind of harsh, because you have no idea what happened in a person's life or what's happening in their soul. There, you know, it's kind of, but you know, it's very easy to get sucked into victimization, and it sometimes can feel hopeless to get out of there. I think that's why we sometimes do have to get help there. You know, I think maybe with all these new holistic therapies out there and holistic practitioners like you as well, you know, then we can help people to move beyond these blocks and these impediments, and we can give them tools to kind of transcend whatever they're facing in life there.
Yeah, exactly. So talk about that chapter in your book, Breakthrough or Breakdown.
That's
interesting, right?
That was the call from heartbreak to breakthrough. It's kind of, you know, it kind of goes to that relationship where, yeah, it was kind of like, you know, this event with this person I met there. And I just, you feel like this is your soulmate, but then it just didn't work out there, you know. But I just was not in a good place, you know. But I feel it was more a karmic debt that I had to pay off, because I think it was something. But it also could be my soul that says, we'll give you this situation here. And whatever meaning you gain from it, it can be either constructive or destructive. Like if you go through and this heart-shattering event happens to you, and then you go into victimization and poor me and terrible, and this person did this terrible thing to me, and I carry that with me for the rest of my life, then I don't gain anything from it. However, if I was to find the deeper meaning from the situation and not personalize it, which I was able to find, because then it brought up stuff in me that I was never aware before.
I think let's go into a little more detail about that, because I think in that is a good teaching. So you felt, what was your process?
Well, for me at the time, I was working with my friend. We had this cleaning business. And up to that point, really, you know, I didn't read any books or anything. And when that event happened to me, I remember I was talking to a friend of mine one day, and I was cleaning these houses down the Jersey Shore, and a guy said, you know, I said, I got to pass some time here cleaning these houses. So I said, you should listen to books there. And before that, I really hadn't read any books, you know, for decades. So I started getting books. And one of the first books I got was called Discover Your Genius by Michael Gelb. And he took in like 10 of history's greatest geniuses. And I was fascinated by them and then he had a book about how to think like Leonardo da Vinci, Seven Steps to Genius Every Day. So really from that in, and every day I would listen to books on philosophy and theology. I was also trying to figure out why this relationship broke down, and was God to blame, and why do relationships break down? So I had all these questions going on in my mind. And I think that the heart-shattering event was very painfully, like your heart, when your heart gets shattered, it takes you to a very, it's like great loss. It's like a grief, like somebody died, belonged to you. That's the feeling there. And your heart is very raw, and the feelings are very raw. And then you're trying to figure out why it happened. And I kind of, my way was to figure out how I could be a more compassionate person. So I remember I went to a tarot reader, and she says, you're feeling too bad about yourself. You got to help people who are feeling worse than you are. So then I became a hospice helper. So I became a hospice helper, and I went to visit a person in a hospice hospital.
Worse than you. Is that why you went to hospice?
Yeah, because I wanted to help people so I could feel good. You know, there's people out there feeling worse than me if I'm dwelling in my own what's happened to me. It's not going to help. But if I can help people who are feeling worse than me, then you find, you know, when you help people, that's the best way to feel better. So I kind of, from there, I began get more compassionate and more understanding. And then after that, I came back and I was very interested in geniuses. And I remember I did this writing course at Hunter College. It was a fall semester, and I was going to, we were writing these short stories that they were telling us doing. And halfway through it, I was getting bored. I said, these short stories are boring. I want to write about a genius. So then I kind of wrote this 90-page thing called Maximize One's Brain Potential, Our Phenomenal Necktop Laptop. So then I was going to compare our brain to a computer. And then I was comparing three great geniuses like Shakespeare and Leonardo da Vinci and Albert Einstein, and how they were kind of, they all came great prodigies. And, you know, Einstein, who really was, he couldn't even speak right, and his Greek teacher once remarked he would never amount to anything. And Leonardo da Vinci was dyslexic, and Shakespeare never went to university or anything. So these great thinkers, you know, they didn't have great education, but they had something deep with them. So I think from there, then I started really learning and reading about intelligence. But I still hadn't gotten into health and wellness. That didn't come for a couple of more years, because once I wrote that thing, then I sent it to my family, and they're saying, whoa, you don't write any stuff. Where did this come from? So I was kind of, that was something that I found in this heart-shattering event that I did not know I had previously. And I think if people can, you know, it's like you find that creative thing in yourself, and whatever it is, I'm not sure, it could be different for everybody. It's what will you gain and gain great understanding from the event that you face in your life, that you can say, I am grateful for this event, because this event gave me something that I may never have found, but I had to go through the difficulties and pain. It's like the caterpillar who wants to become a butterfly. He has to go through death. And then when a caterpillar is inside in the chrysalis, there are things called imaginal cells that come awake. And eventually out of those imaginal cells, the butterfly will eventually transcend. But still that butterfly's got to break through the chrysalis, this little hard shell and this very narrow portal. It has to break through and struggle and fight because it so wants to live that it will eventually break its way through and eventually become the butterfly. So I think for me, it's like breaking through that portal into my higher self, my soul, which took many years to get there and working on myself. But I think if people can see the major events in their life are just, maybe they have such deeper meaning if they can find that.
Wait. So you had this heartbreak pressed, and then you started to work for people who needed more help than you needed. And was that the thing that turned it? What was the thing that turned the heartbreak around specifically?
It wasn't really, it didn't happen like over, it took many years, to be honest with you. It was a very slow process. I think that it for me, it was the creativity. I had a new hunger for life. I didn't have that before, because before I didn't want to read any books. I wasn't interested in any of this stuff. But out of that breakthrough, I became creative. I didn't write any stuff even up to that point, basically. So I just was able to write more and gain greater understanding and be more interested in it and find more enjoyment from it and see how I could use it to move myself forward and find a new understanding to life, which eventually took many years, because I didn't begin to health and wellness for a couple of years afterwards. So it was more about being more creative and just writing at the beginning for me, which was probably one of the first things that I noticed, was more interest in understanding about reality and many different facets of life, you know?
So you went through this intense process. So are you grateful for that heartbreak now? Or do you wish it never happened?
Well, I think if it didn't happen, I may not, because my life really up to that point was kind of like a rudderless ship. I was kind of like, it was like the movie Groundhog Day. I was just living the same life and I didn't really know where I was going. But I think from that point then, you know, maybe it was like an event that, I think we have punctuation marks in our life, and there'll be big events that will come along there. And maybe they're part of the soul's journey. The soul says that this year this will happen. And it says, we'll give you these major points here. What will you do with them? And maybe it's what I gained from, what could I draw from this event? As I said, could I be a victim, or could I gain a deeper insight that could move me in a completely new direction that I was not aware of before?
So then talk about that specific thing. You felt like that was the thing that moved you in a new direction that you didn't have insight before, right?
Absolutely.
This heartbreak.
Yes,
well,
definitely.
So you feeling bad, and then what's the new direction that you moved into?
Well, the
just
new direction.
Helping.
Yeah, to eventually to help people where I am today. But again, I didn't get on there right away. I didn't get into the health and wellness, the health coaching, which came a few years later. And that's where I could become more effective and be more compassionate and empathize with people and help them. And through my own loss and through my own wound and pain and everything, I could kind of empathize with people and understand where they're coming from and help them. And there are issues as well, you know, and particularly with the mind, I think, and with depression and emotions, that's a big focus there with me, because our mind has such a power play over our body. You know, they say wherever the mind goes, the body will follow. So the mind, when your mind is in the right place, your body is in the right place. And so is your perception of reality as well. So I think it was a gradual shifting, but I didn't get to health and wellness for a couple of years. I said it was more just being more creative and be willing to try stuff that I had not tried previously.
But you really suffered. I feel it. Like you really went went through a hard time. I mean, it wasn't a piece of cake. It was.
Yeah, it was heart-shattering, you know. It's like somebody hit you in your chest with a sledgehammer, you know, and your heart just shattered into a million pieces. And, you know, because an emotional wound is really like, you know, if you cut your hand with a sharp knife, you know that soreness. But when you have an emotional wound, that's another scar within yourself, you know, and particularly your heart, because your heart is such a powerful organ. And we know from the organization, California, the Institute of Heart Math, of how important that organ is. That heart is more important than your brain. And it's the portal through which your soul kind of, you access your soul, you know, through the spiritual heart. So, you know, when that heart is shattered, it takes many years to heal it. You know, people say, would they die from a broken heart? I think that would be true, you know, because it's such an important organ in your body that, you know, your whole life depends on one organ. If it stops, it's over, you know?
Well, that's a beautiful way of putting it. So you had this thing, but you knew because that was after your depression, you knew there was somehow a light at the end of the tunnel, even in this very sad moment, right?
Yeah, I think I kind of would describe it. I would say that depression, you have these harrowing, really like dreadful, terrorizing feelings, but with heartbreak or heart loss, it's more like grief and death. It's like somebody put a lance through your heart and there's a void left within you. You feel empty, you know, you feel numb. And I think you have to find that through yourself. It's like, you know, when you're so far knocked down, you can only get back up again, you know, if you want to. And I think that's where, you know, people give up. I know some people who get wounded in relationships, they've tread very carefully ever getting to a relationship again. I've seen that in a few people. They said that was so painful, I never want that to happen again. And they never allow themselves to get into a relationship, which is unfortunate. If they could see beyond the deeper meaning, what was the lesson to be learned here? How could I find the deeper level of myself that I could not find previously? As Nietzsche said, our life is school of war, which that does not destroy me, makes me stronger.
That which doesn't destroy you makes you stronger. Yeah, actually, the I Ching says that too. The I Ching. But so, the exactly. What was the thing that you gained from that?
That is the thing. What can you learn from this event? What did you gain from it that you couldn't make?
What did you learn from your heartbreak?
Well, I may never get into health and wellness. I may never could help people. I may never have understand why I'm here. I could may never have figured out that my soul was the real me and that the whole thing is all based around my soul, that maybe my soul orchestrated this event, or was this event a karmic debt that I had to pay off?
And what did you figure out?
I'm not sure. Maybe there was a karmic debt. Maybe I did this something to this person in another life, and now it was time to pay the debt off. Or was it some way that...
So when does that ever end? Well, when does that ever end? You did something to that person, then you're going to do something to this person. You're going to break their heart the next lifetime.
You know, not really. I wouldn't say so. I think, you know, once the debt is paid, it's over with. It's like you had your credit card bill and you said it's $5,000. Here's a check. Okay, it's paid.
It's over with because you had enough soul presence to not be victimized by it, but use it as an evolutionary tool. Would you say that's?
Yes, I would definitely say that I found something that I could use to help me become a much better person.
So that's the advice you want people to get listening to this program, right? That whatever happens, use it as a tool to become a better person.
Yes, and also if you can learn to forgive people, because, you know, that's one of the hardest things people do. People do terrible things to people, and they're never able to forgive them. But as the quote says, forgiveness is not releasing a prisoner, it's releasing you. If you can forgive that person, you know, you become a way much better person. Doesn't mean you condone the person did, if somebody did something wrong to you and says, oh, it's okay. It's not, you know, that's their karma. That's their issue. They will have to deal with it in your own way. If you can disconnect yourself energetically from it and say, I forgive you or I wish you love, you don't have to contact them, but you can do it yourself. If you can energetically separate yourself, then now you're building on your soul, you're strengthening your soul, you know, and of course it'll depend on the situation, the person involved in, but if you can offer forgiveness.
You're right. There is freedom in forgiveness. You're absolutely right. That was that something you had?
Yes, you become free because you're no longer energetically tied into them. You know, if you still have the resentment and the judgment and they wrong me and that's not right and poor me, see, then you're energetically tied to them. And then if you want to move on to another relationship, you can't because you're still stuck with that energy. You know, you know, if you want to have a new relationship. But first as well, I would probably mention that, you know, when you do have a relationship like that and there's a big wound, you first have to heal yourself. You can't say, oh, a lot of people just jump into another relationship right again and that'll heal me. It's not, you still have the problem. You know, they say, what's, you know.
And you also can't just say, oh, you're forgiven until you really work with that and get over the victimization. If you say you're, oh yeah, I forgive you, and the wound is still there. I mean, not that you shouldn't forgive people, but you know, you have to work with it and realize the gift it was, perhaps, or what you can do, how you said you can work with it, right?
Yes, if you can work with it, and you know, you have to be truly honest with yourself. You know, like just saying "I forgive you," of course, that they're just words, but you got to feel it in your body. You got to be very sincere and truly. You got to feel it in your heart sincerely. I forgive that person. I don't wish him any ill feelings or badness or anything. I have no idea what that person was going through. Was there something a deeper level? But I'm here to work in myself. And the more that I work on myself, the less judgment I have in people, the more forgiving I have, the more compassion I have for people. Then that really helps my soul because I'm just focusing on my soul here. And this is not selfish or anything. It's focusing because then I can become a better person. And then I don't personalize life as many people do. And if
when
we
you
can,
become a better person, of course, you help others as well. So it's
yes,
part of everyone's evolution.
Sure, because you're also feeding that.
You're feeding what?
You're feeding that into the collective consciousness because your thoughts just aren't in your brain. They're going out into the energy of the collective consciousness. So if you're not tied in, personalizing, judging, putting people down, being negative, being toxic, then you toxify the whole collective consciousness. But if you clean up your own act, if you work on yourself, if you can be forgiving, be non-judgmental, be loving, and just kind of, you know, be the true being that you truly are, which is a soul, which is not a judging being anyway, then you're going to feel much better and your body's going to be much healthier as well. And your soul.
But I think that's what being... But being a better person is exactly that, isn't it?
But it's many factors. You've got to get your mind. You might see somebody, you say, oh, they're a great person, but you have no idea what they're thinking. You know, they could have harbored resentment and judgment of their parents or somebody did them wrong, but you've got to be very focused and present of your thought processes. I think that's why meditation and prayer get you very present and aware, so you catch all those negative thoughts that sometimes can shoot up or, you know, will also be triggered as well, because I think relationships are probably the best ways. They can kind of find blind spots that you won't find anywhere else. I think that's the good thing about a relationship. You know, when you're very intimate with somebody, you got to be very vulnerable, and then stuff can really start bubbling up there that you won't see anywhere else.
But to take the whole thing to another level, we've been talking about the hardships and overcoming and the suffering. There is a point, I think, where we go into bliss, where we can live in that joy of being and transcend all this. I think that's becoming more and more available to people, right?
Yes, I think as we work on ourselves again, as you, as I said, the meditation, the prayer, the doing different techniques, you know, where we, I think we need to do a, like a multimodal approach to our health, you know, both physically and mentally and spiritually. So we're supporting these different levels of our being. Then we're really cleaning ourselves up, and then we can become the best person we can. We can live a life of joy, a life of peace, and then we can share that with other people and bring them to that level.
Because that's our destiny.
It is, but also the choices we make can be our destiny as well. You know, if we can choose good or bad, we can hold on to resentment and judgment of people all our life. We can harbor all these kind of things in ourselves. But if we're willing to really just let everything go and not personalizing life, then it's going to be a lot easier. It's going to be much more healthier for us. And
that's then we could really start to, because I think part of our incarnational experience is to go through these, what Shakespeare said, the strings and acts of outrageous fortune, but, and also it, our basic being is joy. I think at the core of who we are is joy.
Yes, I think, you know, the Buddha, like, you know, he talks about the joy of being and bliss. Like, these are David Hawkins. He has this kind of different motions, and joy and bliss are the top of the scale of consciousness. They are the highest frequencies, and we want to get ourselves up there, you know, and only by kind of throwing off the emotional baggage that we carry around for all our life, you know, then we feel lighter, both physically and emotionally and spiritually. And we're moving into these higher frequencies. We can be joyful. We can be blissful. We can be peaceful. And that will ripple out.
That's it. That's what we're here for.
Yes, and we are the ones who bring that. You know, we are the people, if we can go through our own experience and then share that with people, but by kind of cleaning yourself up and setting an example for people to be able to get to. And, you know, I think by going through these difficult challenges, and that they will kind of forge us into becoming better human beings. And we bring that, and we can help more people to get out of their suffering and help them to bring them to their true state, which is meant to be joy and bliss and love and peaceful.
And that's what you're doing. You're bringing them to that place.
That's right. Yes, that's right. It's a process, because people have boundaries, they have barriers. It's a slow process, you know. It takes time for them, because they have to maybe look at themselves really honestly. You know, some people don't want. Some people would rather die than change. That's the problem, you know.
Really?
Some people would rather stay in a miserable relationship. Because it has to.
When you say that, is it just the ego?
I think so, because sometimes people can, you know, with victimization, it can become a crutch. They can use it to say, oh, people are very compassionate towards me. They're very caring. They're very loving. But if I get better and I don't need, no longer a victim, then I got to take care of myself, and I lose all these things. And, you know, they have to, and a lot of people talk about that. But if you want to be healthy, you have to take responsibility for your life. And a lot of people don't want to take responsibility. And again, change means that you may have to let go of yourself. You have to shed yourself, you know. You have to lose yourself to find yourself. And there's fear again. You probably would fear would be there, because the ego says, no, don't lose that, you know, because then people won't like you anymore, and you lose your friendship, and you might lose your status, and you might lose all these things. It's better just to stay the way you are. We see this in relationship, where somebody eventually wants to evolve and to wake up, but the partner doesn't want to change. And it says, why can't you be the same? Well, you're different now. And eventually, if they don't work it out, they will break up the relationship. So the question is, are you ready to kind of step out into the unknown and be your true self? Are you willing to lose everything, maybe sometimes, to really be authentic to yourself? And that's where the fear comes in, you know?
But if they need to lose that relationship in order to evolve, it's a good thing.
But will they do it, though? That's the thing. they might say, "Oh, it's, that's the thing." You see, there's you're stepping into uncertainty. You know, I think that's why people in a bad relationship, they say, "I'm staying here with somewhere I know. It's not great, but it's doable. But if I leave this, I will never. I'll be alone maybe for the rest of my life. Nobody's ever going to love me, and that's so fearful. I better stay here." You know. And then the whole life just passes by and they're miserable, they're unhappy, and the whole life is kind of gone. Where if they were willing just to go out there and step into the unknown, who knows, the possibilities are out there. Their soul is like, we're in this little box here. We have to get out of here. We can't grow anymore.
But what's the best way for people who are unconscious to get them to step into the unknown? What is the key thing that you can help people with?
Well, I think it's the process. I know I've met people who, you know, when they read these spiritual books, maybe like The Power of Now or the Hicks book as well there. They said, when I read these books first, they made no sense to me. I just kind of threw them away. But then maybe 2 or 3 years later, I read them again and I had much more insight. So they may not be ready, you know, to make that change. But, you know, maybe major life events happen sometimes. The universe kind of gives you that kind of wake-up call from the universe. Says, you know, we'll give you this little subtle hints here that you probably really should leave that job or leave that relationship. And maybe sometimes you're not getting it. It's like in The Hero's Journey, Finding Joe, that movie, they have this young kid and he's kind of on this hero's journey and there's this phone out in the parking lot and it rings and it rings and it's like the universe is calling you. It's like, okay, now we're calling and we hope you pick up the phone because we got messages for you about what you should be doing next. But a lot of people don't hear the call, they ignore it, and then the big message comes sometimes, which could be much more profound, maybe job loss, divorce, maybe major illness or whatever. And then people get insights that they finally have to face there, and then they change, you know. But if we can kind of see the subtle things where we're knowing, you know, I don't feel good in this relationship, I feel constricted, I can't grow, I'm more interested in new stuff, then that could be a subtle message that maybe it's time to start moving on, start doing something different.
Well, this is great. So I can feel you really use your life, and of course, because everything you've learned in the sort of, so your soul came in, gave you some things, difficulties, and you've overcome them. You've worked with them to show the bigger picture and the satisfaction of that. Yeah, I think at some point you had a choice. You could have stayed a victim and indulge, but you decided, because of your intelligence or maybe just your soul's evolution, to break out of that and become an awakened being, a more awakened being.
So yes, yeah, definitely. I think that was your
soul revolution.
Yes, it's my soul evolution and my soul revolution, where it says we're going to have a revolution if you don't get out of this constricted life that you're in, like this Groundhog Day situation that you're going around in circles and you're not going anywhere. But exactly. Now we your soul has bigger plans for you. Are you willing to go deeper? Are you willing to really search for yourself? Are you willing to face your demons? Are you willing to look at all aspects of yourself, the good and the bad, without any judgment?
But you heard the message and you were ready. You were ready because you did it.
That's right. Yeah, but it was painful, but it took a while to come to me. It wasn't something that happened. No, it took many years to kind of understand it. And then I had to work on myself for many years as well to get over traumas and, you know.
But you did it.
I did it, and I'm still working it, because it probably would be something that you keep doing, because there's probably so much stuff in our system that we can't even see it all.
But I know. You got it over the worst. You made a soul decision that when it threw at you, you're going to work with it.
Absolutely, but also more, what then can I share with other people? How can I use my experience to guide and assist other people from what I've learned? So really, that's what I want to apply now through the book, that it will reach people and give them new ways that they can support themselves, and also talk to people like I'm talking to you now. We share this with more people. Even if one person changed their life, that in itself would be something very great and be very helpful, you know. But it's these little ripple effects that are going out there, and who knows where they will end up and how they will impact people and what changes that person will make in their life, who then can help somebody else where the ripple continues on.
Well, the change in people's lives would be, instead of suffering, look at what the gift that this is offering you. Would you say that?
Yes, definitely. But I'm not sure what people will see that. You know, it's hard. It's like when you're in a car accident, you know, you're so bruised and beaten up, you know, you have to kind of step away from the accident and, you know, let the emotions slow down to really take a more neutral approach. But that takes time there, you know, when you're caught up in all the emotions of the event. It's
yes,
so hard.
But instead of spending a lifetime, you're helping them accelerate the process.
Yes, you know, if they're absolutely, you know, if they can see that, you know, if they can just step back and now and not get pulled in by the emotional of the event, but if they can really take a more neutral view of it, maybe they'll see something that they could not see before. Maybe something is awakened in them that was not there before.
That's the key. That's the solar evolution. The solar return, the soul returning. I think you got it. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, definitely. I hope now that people will have their soul return and see that their soul has big plans for them. And I think if they're listening to you and me now, I think they're already on a certain resonance, a certain frequency that they're somehow their higher self is saying, let's connect with this kind of information because we need to hear it.
Yeah.
Because we're ready to hear it. We're ready to maybe take some steps. We're ready to take some action and implement something in our life for changes. And that's okay, because I think we all are where we need to be in our life at any specific time.
Right. But this part of this, the solar revolution we're coming into right now. And thank you. How can people find you?
They can go to my website, which is my name, which is it's www.james, James, and my surname, duignam.com. I'll repeat my surname again, which is duignam.com. So it's jamesdignam.com.
Can you say that again?
Dignam is my Dignam.
Right. Thank you, James. This has been enlightening.
Now they can check out my book if they go to Amazon, and my book is Solar Return, S-O-U-L-A-R, Solar Return, if they go into Amazon and do a search in the books. And for the next 3 days, I'm going to be offering the ebook for free on Kindle, so if they want to get that as well. But if you go to Amazon and type in the book Solar Return, then you can find that as well, you know.
Great, great. Well, thank you, and we'll look for some updates. And it's great because you're really doing the work. You're helping yourself. You're helping others. I think, you know, everyone's doing what they can in this revolution of consciousness to see that there's a bigger picture going on. Right.
Yeah. I think, you know, if you just take baby steps, if you just do a little bit every day, it's all I got. Like a newborn infant, you know, it falls down 100 times, but doesn't say, what's the point of getting up again? I'll fall down. But it keeps getting up because it wants to walk. It really wants to move forward. So if we just do a little step every day, you know, it'll all be beneficial on the long term.
Wow. Great. Those are great closing words. But anything else you want to say?
No, really. I'm just so thankful, Alan. I appreciate you having the opportunity to interview, and I hope we can help more people, and, you know, if we get more people to wake up there and help the collective consciousness come to its senses and no longer be so controlled by fear, but maybe if we can all be moving towards a more open, loving heart, because that's what we really need to do to heal the world, you know?
Well, we are doing that. Thank you. Yeah, we'll give you what. Well, this will be archived on BBS. You know, or you can post it on your website, and other people can come and listen to this. I've been talking to James Dignam. And you're in New York City most of the time, right?
Yes.
And if you want to reach him, go to his website, jamesdignam.com. His book, Solar Return,
yes,
as in your soul returning, which is where we're at now, most of us in this time of our evolution and civilization. My name's Alan. You can reach me at newrealities.com, my youtube.com/newrealities, my email newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening tonight.